This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 358 of the More Than Just Come Podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Mark Moykins in
Milton, Vermont.
Thank you. Okay, well, we'll leave it there. That'll be the take. Okay, cool. So yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Tim.
So actually, I was trying to rack my brain as to how I first got in touch with you. Like, I, you know, this is the first time we've actually spoken to each other or looked at each other on a Zoom call, as it were. But I think I got your Swift Views. I think it's called Swift UI Views when it first came out. But I'm trying to rack my brain as to how maybe I knew about you before that book was published. Were you doing some teaching or something like that, or were associated with a school out west?
I was in Utah. Mm-hmm. And as far as like a school, I would give talks at a boot camp, but it's probably not that.
Yeah, I think it was a boot camp. Yeah, what was the name of the boot camp?
Dev Mountain.
Dev Mountain. Yeah, I think that's probably the connection. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was speaking to somebody over there and I can't remember the name of the guy, but yeah, I do recall I was teaching at a boot camp here in Toronto, probably around this would have been 2016 or so. Was that around the same time frame?
Yep.
Yeah. I think somebody dropped your name or told me about Big Mountain Studio, which is, I guess that's your publishing company or your own company.
Yeah. It started out as my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And then later it turned into book publishing.
Okay.
Yeah. I never meant to do book publishing, but it's something I fell into and I loved. And I said, you know, I'm going to continue down this because I like it.
Yeah. Well, I do some tech writing for Ray Wunderlich and the folks over there at Codico. And so I'm always looking at teaching materials. I like to learn the new stuff. And I find that sometimes a book or a video, everybody has different styles of learning. Like I had some people who worked for me, engineers who worked for me in the past, who they didn't like video courses or they wanted a book. And sometimes I like, you know, obviously I started this whole iOS venture with paper books, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, that's not true, I guess, because I ordered one of the books off Pragmatic Programmers in beta, because, you know, when you buy a book in beta, you get like a trial version of it and it's not in ink on paper yet, right? But I used to, you know, behind me, I have all the big nerd books, you know, kind of thing. And I would leave them on, open them up on the couch and I would just code away and learn things. But
yeah,
your books were a little different because you use a very sort of visual style, right? Like you have the graphic and shows the code. And I'm curious as to how you came or thought about teaching it that way.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I had big plans before WWDC 19. Mm-hmm. I was making video courses,
right?
And I had course ideas lined up that I wanted to do. And then Swift UI came out and I'm like, well, what do I do now? You know?
Yeah.
So at first I was like, why are they changing things? I was pissed. I was a little upset. And, but then I started working with it. And as I started to work with it, I started making notes. Now at that time I had, a Patreon, set up, Patreon account.
Mm-hmm.
And I would kind of like put a little something together, you know, with the code and the picture. And then I would send it to them and talk about it. And I'd do that for a while. And then I started keeping notes. Like I remember it was a Google Doc that I had in landscape view. And I'd keep notes just for myself. I'm like, here's a code. This is what it produces. Here's code. This is what it produces. So I could quickly like, oh, I want to make this. And I would go through, I'd open up this Google Doc and go through it. And I think what happened was, this is what I miss about having Patreon. Patreon is like it's like your own inner group that you can talk to and bounce ideas off of, and ask them questions like, hey, do you like this? Do you like that? You know, do you prefer this? Do you prefer that? I miss that. I miss having that.
So I was going to ask about how successful Patreon was for you. Like, are you not doing that anymore? Or?
No, I'm not doing it anymore because it kind of like felt like I was going down two paths at that point. Because on Patreon, like I know you have Patreon, right?
Yeah.
But I kept feeling this obligation, like I need to produce something like every week or every month for them because they're giving me money, right?
Okay, yeah.
So I felt like an obligation there, but then I had this other public, you know, that I also feel an obligation to providing products or videos, and then, you know, start publishing books, and then it just became a little bit too much for me. Mm-hmm. What I did was I said, okay, I'm going to stop this at this point. And then when I created the website and started selling books, I gave them I think I sent everyone like a free book, you know, like say everyone that was here, you can come over to join this community. Yeah. And then, you know, you can join me here and we can chat here if you want. So that's what I did. I moved everything over. I used a platform called Podia, which has been fantastic. But that's how I started with the books. I started, you know, just making notes in Google Docs, and they liked it. And I liked it because I found out, I was like, I'm very like visual learner, and I had to like, see like I look through, I'm like, oh, I want that kind of button. Oh, there's a code. Okay. So I started creating it for myself, then I started creating it for them. And then I started sharing these screenshots on Twitter and people started liking them. Mm-hmm. And then they started, you know, I started getting good feedback and good response from that. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to put this together and create a book for them.
Yeah. So I'm just sharing my screen right now, just so people can see what we're talking about in terms of this is your mastery book, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of like how it is. And I had one guy call it like, Dave Verver, you know?
Yeah.
He saw one of the books and he says, it's like a book of PowerPoint slides, you know? I don't know if that was good or bad, but for me, that's like I prefer it, you know, that's how I like to learn. You know, I could see something, I get the picture. So most of my pages, that's what I try to achieve. You know, I want it to be very visual. So you see the picture, you get some data, and you know, I was curious. I read some studies about recall, you know, mm-hmm. A person's speed of recall, and
right.
Recalling a picture is like 700,000 times faster than recalling words. Oh, so sure, yeah. Yeah, so it was like it was like I don't know how they even measure that.
with instruments.
Yeah, that's right. So that really helped me, you know, and I started really loving it, you know, and I learned so much, you know, putting those books together. I learned mm-hmm. so much that mm-hmm. Like you fall in love with it more and more and more, and then you want to produce more, and it just continues.
Yeah, I think I got your free I was sitting in the keynote audience when they announced Swift UI, right? I was actually also there in 2014 when they announced Swift, right? So I've been there for a couple of paradigm changes. iOS 7 was there for that too. But so I think, you know, when I got, I was a little excited about Swift UI because, you know, I've always joked with my friends that, you know, having gone through Objective-C and having learned that learning curve and then having to go through Swift, and Swift is a little easier, obviously. But I always joke that Adobe is going to come out with Adobe iOS App Maker 1.0, you know, and it's going to be, you know, point and click and that kind of stuff, right? And Swift UI is very much like that, especially now with watching a lesson by another author, I can't remember his name right now, but he showed how you can actually drag objects from the library right into the Canvas view and then have it write the code for you, which to me, as somebody who came to do engineering, you know, the hard way, I studied art and stuff like that in school, doing it visually was much more approachable.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, like, as I said, if I have to read documentation, I begrudgingly will do that, right? But if there's a video, I'll sit and watch a video and I'll, you know, because I can rewind it, I can pause it, I can go back, you know. And the same thing with your books, you know, because I come from a very graphic nature, right? That to me, they speak a lot too, you know. So I've enjoyed going through your books I haven't really gone page by page, but I've dove into them, looked stuff up here and there, and I enjoy the style. I'm just curious how that's being received or what kind of feedback you get from people on that.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I wouldn't continue it unless I got really good feedback from it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very well received. I talk to other entrepreneurs about things like return rates. Mm-hmm. You know, people refund rates. People that want, you know,
oh, really?
Refund.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I was talking to my father about this. You know, he asked, you know, do people return the books? I'm like, not really. I mean, after after a big sale, I might get two refunds,
right?
All in all. And sometimes it's because, you know, they thought it was something else, but it wasn't it, you know, it wasn't what they're looking for. Like a guy was looking for like a core data book, but he bought the, working with data in Swift UI book.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, I made a mistake. But I've never had anyone return it because they didn't like it. You know, no one's ever said, you know, I don't like, you know, learning visually. I want paragraphs.
Well, I gotta say that the price point as someone who's in the game, I don't think it's that expensive. I mean, like, you know, if I wanted to buy equivalent book, you know, printed by O'Reilly or something like that, or even the big nerd books, you know, you're looking at $50-$60, you know, to get a book of mm-hmm. some substance. Whereas I think your prices are much more reasonable. And I know you do have sales as well too, because I've taken advantage of, like, you know, I think the first Swift book was the Swift Views one. I believe that was free, right? And then I don't remember paying a lot, or was really low, right?
There was a quick start book.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's free, and you can still get that for free today.
Yeah. So, and then you also do, I think you do the same thing that most of the digital publishers do, and that's if there's an update and you've bought it within a reasonable amount of time, you get the free update, right?
Right. Go ahead. You know, that was a tough thing to decide what to do, as far as like free updates or no free updates. Because, you know, I think a lot of software companies, they run into this too. They're like right. it's not you know, sustainable.
Yeah.
You have to count on brand new customers every single time.
Yeah.
Throughout time. And at some point, it's going to level out, and then it's going to decline. And so I was like, how do you handle this problem? What do you do with this? And I actually got the idea from Ray Wenderlich. I looked at his book update policies and I adopted it. So what he said was, you'll get free updates if it's a minor updates or minor revisions, sure. Updates and changes. But if it's a major rewrite, then you have to buy the book again.
Right.
And so for me, I still had my Patreon audience at that time. And I asked him, I said, hey, if I was going to do a major rewrite, but I still wanted to give the previous customer a discount on, you know, to upgrade. Mm-hmm. I said, what would it be at? And I think I gave him like 50% off, 60, 70, or 80%. And mm-hmm. and most of them pick 70% off. So that's what I do. I say, but like last year, there wasn't really a major rewrite.
Right.
It was pretty easy to update it. You know, it's mostly like updating navigation view to navigation stack. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it worked, you know, there's no errors. You could just do search and replace and it worked. So I didn't really charge for that. And none of the other books had to be, it required major effort. It did require major effort the year before. It mm-hmm. was like, not only were there a lot of deprecations, but there are a lot of other new things added. I think the year before, man, it increased the size of the book by like 30 to 35%, mm-hmm. something like that. Like when I first released that book, the first release of the book was, I think, about almost 400 pages. And now it's over 1,000 pages.
I was going to say your mastery book is like, 1,009 pages on the EPUB I'm looking at right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that thing's grown. And it was mostly from, you know, like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a major rewrite, and I did charge for that to upgrade. So that's been interesting, and for the most part, I never got any pushback from that.
You're a solo author. You don't have a team of people like Ray has working for you, right?
Right. Yeah. I write everything start to finish.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. I mean, I've worked on some of the books at Ray. I've been a tech editor, and I've worked with some of the other authors, and I've watched the process over there, right? And it's pretty hefty. I mean, you really need to know your stuff. But I got to say, like, just coming back to the whole, you learn a lot yourself, right? I can tell you an inside baseball story about the Ray Wenderlich group. Is we all take on a story or take on a course that we know maybe 30% of the content. By the time we're done, we're an expert. But like, we all learn the task we're writing about as we do it, kind of thing, you know?
You know what? I try to convince my friends to write books all the time. And they tell me, they're like, I'm not an expert in it. And I'm like, that it's even better when you're not an expert.
Sure.
Because here's what I find, the reason why, and this seems counterintuitive, but through my own personal experience, when you write about something you don't know, you're going to run into all the pitfalls, you're going to run into all the barriers, you're going to run into all of the gotchas, and you can write about that. Sure. You know, you can put warnings in there, like, don't do this, you'll get an error. Don't do that, you'll get an error. Make sure you do this, you know? Right. And I've that's actually happened to me before, too, where I've written about something I really know, and then I get questions from, you know, the students or customers are like, well, what about, how do I do this? How do I do that? I'm like, oh man, I totally, you know, I didn't even
think about that edge case. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Cause I'm so used to doing it one way that I don't think about like doing it these other ways. Cause you know, cause I know that's the wrong way and I know I'm going to get error this way. So like, I didn't even cover those aspects of it. Mm-hmm. So I think, if anyone's listening to this that wants to write a book, don't be afraid to write it. If you don't know it 100%, that is actually in your favor. Because you can then pass on your trials and errors. So the next person doesn't run into those things.
Yeah. Actually, a friend of mine, Ryan Nystrom, once said, you know, the thing about it is like, you may think you're not an expert. There's maybe one thing you know. Like, if you put that out there and you share that, even if it's a Twitter post or LinkedIn post or something, or just, you know, if you teach one person something that they didn't know before, you've given back to the community, right? So that's, it was sort of his talk about why we do open source development or contribute to open source, right? But yeah, I take that as a sort of credo as well. Like, you know, I always want to make sure that even if you already know what I'm going to tell you, you know, maybe there's a nuance that you didn't know that I've experienced, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
By the way, I should write the book that I'm the worst defender of that, because I should be writing books, and I do a podcast instead of writing a book because it's easier.
I think you'd be great at it. You know, I think it's something that everyone can benefit from, and I think that's a great attitude you have too about like, I never consider myself an expert, but it doesn't stop me from writing,
mm-hmm.
but it also doesn't prevent me from not learning anymore. Like, right. Sometimes, you know, some people can consider themselves an expert, and so they don't try to learn new things, and they stop learning. Like once you believe you know everything, you're not, it's harder to learn.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I've been doing these talks for a couple of years, conference talks about neuroplasticity. And because I learned, one of my assignments at Ray Wunderlich was, and apologies to people who've heard me tell this story before, but here we go again. Awesome. I had to write a story about, you know, how to keep learning after 50. And I thought, oh, I could do that. I'm in the age group. I was on the article team at Ray Wunderlich at the time. And so I picked up there's a wish list of articles that Ray would put together. So I grabbed that one and started researching it. And reached out to my other older friends, the gray beards, as I like to call us, right? And I said, hey, how do you guys keep up to date? How do you learn and all that kind of stuff? And a friend of mine sent me over to this book or this course called Brainjo, which is about learning how to play banjo, taught by a neuroscientist. And he talked about how the brain actually works and how memories are formed and all that kind of stuff. And I found a bunch of other lectures as well. And the reality is there is that whole thing about you can't teach an old dog new trick is complete hogwash, because I'm living proof. I didn't deliver my first app until I was 50. Right. And, you know, I'm now 12 years into it, and I'm constantly learning stuff. You know, I mean, I just, today I'm working on how to do test-driven development because it's something I'm interested in. I go back to that trough every now and then, and, you know, today I cemented a few more neurons by doing that, right?
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I don't think there's any end to it.
Yeah, no, I can tell you, I'm still learning. I learn every day, kind of thing. But I've also, you know, having studied neuroplasticity, I now know how to hack my own brain.
So tell me, what is neuroplasticity?
So neuroplasticity is it's basically it's a study of brains. It's basically how memories are formed, right? And so initially, you know, there's when your brain is trying to figure out some new task or technique, and the lady Laura Bird from UBC, University of British Columbia, Dr. Lara Boyd, talks about how they work with stroke patients and getting them to relearn how to use other parts of their brain when part of it shuts down, which is what stroke patients are suffering from, right? And so she talks about how memories are formed. And the funny thing is the name of the video is Your Brain Will Change After This Talk, right? And so in building, so what happens is when your brain needs to learn a new thing, it creates a chemical bond in your brain between neurons, because that's how memories are sort of stored, like how the memory, like if you think about like RAM or hard drives, right, or SSDs. Yeah. And that memory or that connection will dissipate over time if you don't use it, right? So like, what did you have for breakfast this morning? You may not remember because it's not important. Your brain kind of goes, I don't need to hang on to that information, right? Yeah. But if you're learning a new skill or something like that, and the secret is to do it in small chunks, not a 24-hour or weekend binge. That doesn't really work either. You feel great after, like right after it's over, because you've got all these chemical knowledge in your head, but nothing's permanent yet, right? So by doing repeated goes at it in small chunks, around 40 minutes or so is a good session, maybe every day, your brain will start to go, okay, well, this is an important thing that Mark wants to remember, so let me make a structural change in his brain. And it actually kind of hardwires the memory into your brain. And that's why you remember skills like driving a car, brushing your teeth, and speaking another language, that kind of stuff. Because those things, your brain can always recall those quickly because they're permanent changes, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you take a bunch of these different connections and you build them into a behavior, like a function or a script, if you think about it that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you turn on your car, right? Every car is different, but your car is particular. And you know, you know when you want to go to buy milk at the store, you get into the car, you know, you stick the key in, you check the gas, you adjust the mirrors, you put the seatbelt on, you put your indicator on, you leave and you drive into the street, right? All of that is behavior, right? So kind of like a functional programming kind of thing, right? Your brain starts to put together these connections. So you get to the point where you can go to the buy milk at the store without even remembering that you drove the car.
Yeah.
Right. Because it just becomes that easy. And I find it's the same thing with learning a new language or learning a programming language. Or learning, like, you know, I have particular things in coding that I always forget to set the delegate. That's my blocker, right? But you know, if you ask me today how to create an empty array, you know, I've done it enough times that you know, I can do that now, right? I can create an empty array in Objective-C in PHP and in Swift because I've done those three different versions of the same thing, right? So Apple's making it easier for us, obviously, but you know. But so the neuroplasticity part of it is this is how, if you understand how your brain works, you can retrain your own brain. So, you know, programs like Noom, if you want to lose weight, Noom uses neuroplasticity to break your habits and teach you new skills, as well as some psychology. Duolingo, if you ever used the Duolingo app, it teaches you how to speak other languages. By, if you think about it, it's little tiny lessons, in a short, you know, 5 minutes a day, they say, right? Over time, you know, like we went to Portugal a couple of years ago, and if I hadn't done Duolingo for like a month before I went, we had to go buy groceries after we landed. You know, we couldn't read the milk bottles to say, is this non-fat? Is this 2%? Is it, you know, like all that kind of, and even what the word for milk was, right? I mean, if I hadn't done the Duolingo course, I wouldn't have known that word. I got the gender wrong when I said thank you to the cashier at the cash, but you know, you know, we don't use gender in English, right? But So I mean, by hacking my own, like learning that's how I learn. So I know when I want to learn the news, like if I want to pick up your book and learn a bit more about Swift UI, I know not to try and read the whole book and then I'll be a genius, right? I know to try a little bit. Take a break, go watch Mandalorian or something like that, and then come back tomorrow, you know? And same thing with music. Like I've been playing guitar for 30 years and I sucked at it when I started, and I probably sucked at it for the first 10 years, you know, if you think about it, you know, but I've had to perform publicly before, and I even had to learn new songs. So I used this whole neuroplasticity trick to teach myself a song that I needed to play like 3 or 4 days later.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What's the main thing to retain? Is it like repetition or something, or
it is practice. Unfortunately, that's the work, right? But I think that the trick is repeated practice over a certain amount of time. And short bursts, not like don't try and binge don't try and think. And it's not easy. I mean, it's not a silver bullet. It is work, right? Yeah. Like the yeah. Noom program, for instance. You know, you're not going to you'll lose weight initially because everybody does when they first start a diet program, right? But mm-hmm. you have to stick with it. You know, and they teach you some mindfulness and they teach you some psychology about food. You learn about different kinds of food and how they count towards your weight gain or weight loss. Right. Mm-hmm. And they also teach you about how your body metabolism will mess with your brain too. Like, you know, you'll go for a week at a time where you don't lose a pound, right? Because your body's going, oh, well, hang on a second. There's less food coming in. I need to make some adjustments. And it starts to adjust everything, yeah. right? And if you yeah. don't learn that science or you don't learn that bit in that, the diet program doesn't work. And that's a lot of the reason why people want an easy fix. I want an easy fix, trust me. But
yeah, that's right. You know?
So I mean, I like, for instance, if I want to learn Swift UI, I mean, I'll watch a video. I'll, you know, watch Muhammad Azam. I'll look at Hacking with Swift by Paul Hudson. Yeah. You know, I'll read your books. I'll read the Ray Wenderlich books. I'll go to some LinkedIn courses, and I'll kind of come at it from different perspectives. Yeah. And by trying these different little tasks over time, I learned the general task of making an empty array in Swift. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or yeah. writing a test case, or, you know, or whatever the challenge is, right?
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you a funny thing that happened that I learned just this week when it comes to learning, because I'm the same way, like what you just said. You know, when I want to learn something, I start with Apple, mm-hmm. you know, and usually they're, you know, their help documents, right? So I
work for the documentation team, and I know all about them. Yes.
Oh, wow. They've come a long way. They're actually like, they're getting
better. There's a lot of work to be done there. Yeah. Like we know.
Yeah. So, I start there cause that's the source, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not going to lie to me, but if I can't figure it out, then, I'll watch a video, but then I'll watch another video to get this guy's perspective.
Yeah.
And then I'll read this article to get this guy's perspective. And by the time, like you get like these five things, you're like, all right, I think I have a good, you know, solution that I can implement now. So this week I learned another thing that I can use, and I've been beta testing Microsoft Bing's Edge browser.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, I never thought I would actually install Microsoft's browser, wow. you know, on my Mac or, you know, even on my PC for that matter. But I was curious, you know, because they invested billions into, you know, ChatGPT mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. are integrating into their browser. And I was like, let me just take a look. You know, I'm a little bit curious. So I started playing with it a little bit and I didn't quite, you know, there isn't like a video on it yet because it's beta and it's changing. Like even while I was testing it, it changed and they introduced some new things. Sean Allen, he had a tweet earlier this week, and he says,
"Yeah,
if you're going to be a developer, there's, you know, he basically said you need to learn how to read Apple documentation because we can't, as content creators, we can't write and podcast and have videos on everything. So you're gonna run and you're gonna have to use it." And I'm like, I started thinking, I'm like, I wonder if this tool that I'm looking at can help with reading documentation. So I did some experiment with it.
Now you got my attention. Yes.
Yeah. So I just made. And what happens is, so you have the browser open, right? And I just put out a little video on this on Twitter because earlier this week I mentioned, I'm like, hey, I want to do a test real quick because I couldn't think of like a hard topic off the top of my head. So I put a mm-hmm. tweet on that. I said, tell me something that's really hard for you to learn. It can be one word, you know, in the Swift language or some concept. And I got, you know, a bunch of initial replies. And so I said, I'm going to use this tool to read the documentation, and then I'm going to create a quick blog article on it, okay. you know, and see like how fast it can do. I can do it. So I found out a bunch of interesting things. So first of all, this side panel that opens up in your browser. So you have, you know, Apple's documentation, and then you have the side panel that opens up, and that's the AI part, right?
This is Bing.
This is in their okay. Edge developer
Edge, edition. Right? Edge, yeah, yep.
yeah. But it's called Bing Chat or Bing yeah. Discover,
okay. right?
So the side panel opens up, and that side panel is aware of the contents that you're looking at.
That's, oh, cool.
You know, in that tab.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can say, give me a summary of what's on this page. And it'll tell you, it'll start to print out. It says, well, you know, what they're trying to teach here is this and that and this and that. And you're like, wow. You know, so, and then I experimented with a bunch of prompts, and I found out all you have to say is summarize, and it'll give you like a little paragraph of what's on the page, or you can say takeaways, and that will give you bullets, you know, key takeaways. It'll give you like, you know, a few bullets of key takeaways on that page, what's being taught. And then I did this little experiment. It's in this video that's on Twitter. So I did this little experiment where I got to a page that, you know, that just has the signature, right, of the function, but maybe like one line of description for it. And there's no code examples, no description to kind of figure it out what it is. So I typed in something like, explain this topic to me like I'm a 5-year-old. And it started to, you know, it like printed out. It says, imagine if you have a box of toys, you know, it starts off with something like that.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. And then I also noticed that you can change the age too. Like, explain this to me like I'm 14 years old.
Right.
And it uses a different concept. Like, say you have a deck of cards, you know, this was like on a navigation stack. It was teaching me, or navigation view, it was teaching me about navigation view. And then I also found out that you could, so on that help page, there was no code sample. So I said, show me some code samples on how to use this function. I think it was a function. Show me some code examples on how to use this function. And it printed it out, you know? So, you know, just from like using that AI chat, you know, I could get a summary, I could get key takeaways, and I could get code samples on how to use what was in the Apple documentation. And that's so cool. So I use that, you know, when people gave me ideas, I use that and I try to like, you know, explain it to me, give me the summary. And then I put them all together and I put it into a blog using Medium. And then I put the link back to them. Like, it only took about, I'd say like maybe 20 minutes per topic, because some things, like, you can say, explain it to me like I'm 5. But they'll still use technical words that they don't introduce and explain that. And that's one of the ways that I like to teach, whether it's in the books or in my videos on YouTube. When I come up with a new word that I need to introduce to the audience, I'll tell them what the word means first. I think it was like, I forget which article it was, but like, for example, they mentioned concrete type. And I'm like, you know, this is a beginner, he might not know what a concrete type is. So then I had to add, you know, a concrete type is this and that and this and that and that.
Right.
And then, you know, then I could put the code sample in there. Now that was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool experiment where I could get answers in a way that like I could understand and make it easier for me to digest. But one of the like dangers to it too is someone told me, like, luckily I had someone actually read it, and then they got back to me and they said, you know, I think part of this is old. You know, it might be a little bit outdated, and they do it this way now, or, you know, that's good for this, but we don't really use the situation. So you could like learn from AI, but you just have to be a little bit wary. You know,
I had heard that. And I think ChatGPT told me that it's a couple of years behind, like it's only been trained up to 2021 or something like that.
21. Yeah, that's right.
So there's challenges to that. But yeah, that's a really cool hack. I've actually done it. I used to interview a lot of engineers. Right now I'm not hiring, so I'm not really interviewing them. So I decided to interview ChatGPT as an iOS engineer, and I published it on my blog. So I went through all the questions that I would ask an engineer. There was only one or two areas where it kind of got it wrong. And if I corrected it and asked the question a different way, it came back with the right answer. So I published all that, including the wrong answers, right?
And that's interesting.
Yeah, and I've asked it to write a description of my podcast. Like, tell me, what do you know about this podcast? And it wrote me a really amazing description. So that's now on my website.
Yeah. You know what? I was just using a ChatGPT, not Bing. And see, that's another weird thing too. Like, I know I get two different responses from both engines. I thought like Microsoft was using straight ChatGPT.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. It's really strange. So I see it, I think it actually combines search and AI. Because sometimes I'll ask it a question and then it'll show me it's searching. It's actually searching for different things.
Mm.
And then it writes it, you know, compiled from the internet and from AI, or its training model, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of strange. I don't know exactly like what they're doing there. I haven't looked into it. But what I was going to tell you was, so I was using ChatGPT, and I, you know, with the new book I'm coming out with, I'm like, I wonder if it can write copy for me.
Right.
So I said, tell me the, and you know, and there's this line, like when you sell something, it's called feature, benefit, meaning.
Oh, really?
You know? Okay. And that's a way to like say, oh, you know, instead of saying this book is 500 pages, you know, that's a feature, right? But who cares? What is that? What's the benefit of that? And what does that mean? So you say, this book is 500 pages. The benefit of that is that it has, you know, everything you need to know. And then that means that it'll save you time from having to go to different sources. And so you can get solutions quicker and implement solutions faster, right?
Nice,
that feature benefit meaning. So I tried to ask ChatGPT to write that for me, and it kept messing up. Like,
Oh.
It should be one sentence, right?
Yeah.
This and that, and this and that, and this and that, you know, feature, benefit, meaning. But it kept, you know, like creating like bullets, like feature, blah, 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 benefit, blah, 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 meaning, blah, blah, blah. And so after a few tries, I couldn't get it right. So then I'm like, I wonder if I can ask it how I should tell, you know, like, so I asked ChatGPT, I'm like, tell me how I am supposed to ask you to get feature, benefit, meaning in one sentence.
Oh, really?
Right, and it cool. told me. It says, nice. It says, if you ask me this way, I'll be able to write it for you. And so I did. And I started to realize, so I, you know, like I've been watching like a lot of videos of like prompt engineering, you know, if you want to get this result, you ask this way. If you want to get this result, you ask it this way.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I realized, you know, you don't have to remember any of that, any prompt engineering, because you can ask ChatGPT how to prompt itself. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want. Like if you want something and you're not getting the right answer, ask it. Say, how should I ask you? And I'll tell you. It's like, ask me this way, I'll tell you.
Cool. Well, let's talk about your core data book that's coming out. Because I actually grabbed the preview that you created, right? Because I'm actually working on, I've been using core data for years and years of Objective-C and Swift and stuff like that. And I'm really curious about how to use it in Swift UI. All of the courses I've gone through, except for one online, take you through the basics of core data with a single entity, right? The challenge I have is my apps all have multiple entities and they're all related to each other, right? Because I come from relational database kind of design, right? And
absolutely.
So and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but that's what I'm kind of looking forward to is your perspective on that. Hopefully it's in the book, but and I mean, so why don't you tell the audience about what your book is going to cover and what are the feature benefits and the meaning of your book?
Yeah. You know, I actually, I come from a relational database background as well.
Sure.
Old time developer. And I'm probably close to an age to you. I'm 52. I just turned 52.
Right.
And so I remember taking that course in college and thinking, what am I going to use this for? And it ended up being the most beneficial course, you know, I ever took.
Really?
And it's strange too, because, you know, you see a lot of like statements of like, you can't think of, you know, core data, like a relational database. And I'm like, I can.
Yeah.
And it works just fine, you know? but it's, there's a translation layer. Like if you understand that translation layer, you're like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But the book, I actually have a teaching methodology that I kind of developed and I shared with my patrons when I had Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I start with concepts. I make sure they're, you know, I get all the words because, you know, it's like all of our audiences are, it's multinational, right?
Right.
So yeah. Don't use big words at all. And when you do introduce a word, you define it and let them know what it means. And maybe give them an example. So I start with concepts first, and I think you saw that in the book, the quick start book that I was having people beta read and give feedback on.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that with a lot of the chapters too. I start with concepts. I show diagrams. I show, you know, I tell them for complicated things, I'm like, there's three major steps. These are the three major steps I'm going to walk you through. And I show them a little diagram. We're going to go from here. We're going to go here, and then we're going to go here. Okay, let's get into step one. You know, and then I take them through that. And I do cover relationships, like you were saying, which is fun. That was a fun chapter to go through, except for one. One of the relationships was a self-referencing relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Where the book references itself. And it wouldn't have been so complicated. I thought it was going to be easy because this guy, I have this guy asking me a lot of questions. He doesn't ask me questions. He sends me these super long emails. I remember one of the things he wanted to do, he was trying to do, he's like, I have a table and I want to show hierarchical data, you know? I'm like, that should be easy. And I'm like, you use a self-referencing, you know, entity, has a relationship to itself, you know, like parent child, right? And it turns out it wasn't easy. And it took me a while to figure it out. But eventually the thing that made it not easy was I wanted specifically to use two controls. I wanted to use the list view, which has a children parameter. So that will create, you know, that your hierarchy. And I wanted to use outline group, which is similar to, you know, shows hierarchical data and you can configure it anyway. And it wouldn't work with those. And it was tricky. That took a lot of research to do that. But it was, in the end, I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is so useful. You know, I can totally see how this is going to like help someone. So that was fun. CloudKit was a joy. So let me back up, you know, before this, like core data, I had used it before SwiftUI and it was not fun. it was not fun at all. It was confusing for me. I ran the trouble and I eventually gave it up, you know? And I thought, I'm like, well, I'll wait till it gets easier. And it didn't really seem like it was getting easier, until SwiftUI came out and they came out with Fetch Request. And I started looking at it again, and then they made some, you know, big changes where they, they brought a lot of these tools together into one tool. I don't want to use like technical terms, but you know what I mean? Like they had this huge stack that you had to set up all these pieces before of the stack. And now you can take all those tools and they're all in one and it's just a few lines of code and it's all initialized for you. It's like magic. You know, going through that was just an absolute joy of like how easier things have become, and how nice things have become, especially working with SwiftUI, and just getting it set up.
I really like the CloudKit piece. Cause I mean, like for me, when I'm working on stuff, like I like to say I'm from Missouri. I like to see it. Right. And I'm not from Missouri, but that's just an expression. Right. When I, was working with an original, piece that I'm trying to refactor an existing database. I'm trying to work with the database I've got now, which is probably the first mistake I'm making, right? I mean, not database, but I'm working with a core data mob, right? And mom object, right? But what I liked about it was I could, as soon as I hooked up CloudKit, I could actually go over to the cloud interface, you know, the dashboard, and I could actually create records over there. You know, because it's easier to see some things over there than it is over here in core data. So I just wanted to get some data into the box so that I could start playing with it, manipulating it, right? So, and I hadn't made my new, let's create a new record view yet, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, and I just found that super useful. And then the beauty of that is that, I can work on my iPad here, or I can work on the simulator, or I can work on my phone, and it's the same data across the board, right? So, which is really kind of cool, you know?
Yeah. They did a great job making that more accessible to us developers.
Definitely. Well, I mean, and what I've always liked about core data is, you know, I used to teach an Objective-C course back in the day. And, you know, like if you've ever done any kind of CRUD development, you know, create, reuse, update, delete, it's all, you had to do it all, right? In core data, you just kind of said, here's the object, save it.
Yeah.
And then give me the object back, you know.
Yeah.
that in itself is like worth the price of admission for sure. Like when core data gets a lot of beatings from people, because you're, like you said, it was kind of difficult to sort of get your head wrapped around the fact it's not a relational database, right? It's not an SQL table, it's not, you know, it's all of that combined with a bunch of secret sauce that Apple's put in there, right? And I mean, I originally got into it because I wanted to write iOS apps and Mac apps that would talk to each other. And, you know, that was, I think Leopard was when core data came out, I think right when I was first starting. And so that's why I chose to go down that route. I never actually got around to building the Mac app. But, you know, the fact that I was using core data meant that I could at some point, right? So, It's kind of cool. I actually want to ask you, so you mentioned a couple of times your team and your and the work you're doing right now. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing and where you're working, and is it full-time contract?
Yeah, no, it's actually it's one of the first full-time jobs that I've ever had. Before this, I was doing web development and writing web services and creating web applications used internally.
Right.
That's one of my criteria for apps is I only work on internal apps because, and you know, I never want to work on a public facing app because then you're talking about like weekends and support, right? And right. after hour support. So I'm like, no way. So where I work now is awesome. And it was actually my first iOS job, paid job, you know what right. I mean? For yeah. iOS development. And a friend of mine told me about it. They're looking for someone. And so I applied and I got the job. And it's awesome. It's so awesome because they, before I got there, there's only six of us on the team. And before I got there, they had already worked out with management to work remotely 100%. And this is back in 2015, you know, so it wasn't like too common back then.
Right.
But they swung it, you know, they got it. And not only did they get that, but they also convinced them to work 4 or 10 hour days.
Right.
Which is that's like, it's not very common, you know? So that alone, the benefits were fantastic. And having that Friday off, you know, opened up a lot of opportunities for me, you know, as far as like Big Mountain Studio. Because sure. now you get like an extra day where you can dedicate your Fridays to working on your own stuff. So that really helped out. And we work on, oh man, we made a mistake, Tim. We made a huge mistake. We adopted Xamarin to build the next app.
Okay.
It looked amazing on paper. You know, it's like, because we had three Android developers and we had three iOS developers. Okay. And we're like, how can we reuse, you know, some of these components? Because we're building the same app together. Mm. And Xamarin looked amazing. And it turned into like the biggest nightmare ever. We'll never do it again. And that app is like, we maintain it, but we don't add new features to it. And we're gonna be sunsetting it at some point. We have a lot of analytics on it, so we know what people use the most and what they don't. And so we want to merge that into either our new app or a new like specialized app. But that's for management, marketing, and sales.
What's the app do? What's it for?
Yeah. So the Xamarin app.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the company that I work for, they make health products, vitamins, minerals, and health foods.
Are they in Vermont based or the remote?
Oh, no, this is in Utah.
Utah. Okay. Oh, okay. So you're still working with the same people.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, cool.
And so this app that we worked on was for the salespeople where they could keep track of like contacts, arrange deliveries. They could also use it to promote the company and to share and to get, you know, leads and connections and sales and stuff like that. That was that app. It was kind of like a CMS app, you know, to mm-hmm. keep track of people. And a lot of that, like we fought a lot of that. The guy that wanted all these features in it were like, you know, a person's phone can do most of that stuff. But it's cool that we had the analytics in it because we could see, or management could see that like parts of those app, you know, a lot of those parts weren't even used. But some of the parts, the sharing parts were used tremendously. So people really liked it for the sharing. So we're going to move that into something else. Our new app is completely in Swift UI and Jetpack Compose. And it's just been a complete pleasure to work on. Mm. You know, we don't even support because it's not released yet. We don't have to like support two versions back or one version back.
Right.
So we're supporting like the most current version right now because it probably won't get released till like iOS 17.
Oh, you know? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, I mean, everybody knows how to do this now because we all work remote for the last 3 years, but like, how did you guys manage how do you manage like communication? Like what tools do you use? Do you use like tools like Zoom or WebEx? to communicate? Like, how do you keep in touch with the team?
Yeah. So we use Slack.
Right.
And back then, well, actually, first we used Google Hangouts. Mm-hmm. Then we moved to Slack when that came out. And we would use Zoom, but we would also go into the office every once in a while too. Our sprints are 3 weeks long.
Oh, okay.
So we would go into the office like every 3 weeks. We'd go in for the sprint for review.
Retro and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Exactly. And we'd see each other and we'd have lunch. And then a few of us lived pretty close to each other. So we would actually get together and work at like Starbucks or, you know, the library or something like that. So, you know, we loved hanging out, and it's a rare thing, you know, when everyone on the team like loves each other.
Yeah.
But luckily it's like, you know, that's just the way it is. We all like, you know, we've all been working with each other for like 7 years now, and we all get along really great. And, so another thing we do is, so team activities are like important to us, and, that's what we tell management. So we can have barbecues. so we get together for barbecues, nice, you know, during the day. And we'll invite our managers and supervisors. And so that's fun too.
Anyway, so I do have another part of the show, and we've gone on quite a while. If you're okay, I want to ask you a few questions. If you're still okay to carry on, these are more fun. They're a bit more about Mark than they are about the books and stuff like that. But so if you're ready and you're seated comfortable, we can get started.
Yeah. Yeah,
cool.
Let's go ahead.
All right, well, the first one is, what is your motto?
My motto? Wow, that's a good question. I never really thought about it. I feel like I kind of have to generate one on the spot here.
Ask ChatGPT.
Yeah, right.
We can come back to it if you like.
Yeah, let's come back to it.
All right, well, let me ask you this question. What's your favorite word?
My favorite word? What's your favorite word, Tim?
Ensorcelled.
Ensorcelled.
Yeah. I got that one from my wife, actually. But there is another word that I used a lot when I was a teenager, but because it's a derivative fire truck.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I probably say right far too often because you know, I'm Canadian, so we say A a lot, but I also find that Canadians also say right. You know, we'll tell you something and we'll say right. You know, yeah. So I say that a lot. And lately, when I'm trying to explain something and I'm going to get that mental pause, I picked up this up for a friend of mine. I keep saying, you know what I mean? You know, when you're trying to tell a story, you know, and you don't know how to, you know, like these are filler words and, you know, you go to Toastmasters to learn how to break that stuff. But yeah, so if you're stumped on the favorite word, we can move on.
I do have a favorite word. Okay. It'll take some explaining.
All right. Yeah, no, that's the whole point. You tell me the word and then you explain it.
Yeah. So this, I don't know. The team that I work on right now is fantastic. They're like my best friends, and none of us ever want to leave, you know? So it's like the dream team. And I noticed this at my previous job, that there's a strange phenomenon that starts to happen when I start to get to know people well. And we both like each other, and it's we start syncing on our thoughts. Like I'll start thinking about something, and then you say it, or you'll start thinking about something, and I say it. And there's no explanation for it. I don't know why it happens, but it started happening to all of us on our team, and it started happening quite often. Where at first it was scary, and now we're just kind of used to it. And so my friend, he invented a word for it. He says we're starting to develop a cognitive connection. Like, cognitive connection, that's good. And then you know, as we all started using it, then we shortened it to CogCon, you know. Mm. We're like, oh man, we got good CogCon going on today, you know.
Right.
And then one guy started calling it Cognoggin, you know. So now we say Cognoggin. Or just noggin, sure.
Got some good cognoggin going there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Cool. Well, I never said you couldn't invent your own word for this question, right? So let me move to a different kind of question. What is the best sandwich?
Oh, man. You know, this is actually my parents' house, and my father had some health issues. So, you know, this was a good opportunity for me to get some space and then also help my parents.
Family, sure, yeah, yeah.
They have a garden, you know. This is the house I grew up in, and we have a garden. We worked in a garden and everything every summer. And so I started making this sandwich, and my mom will bake bread, you know.
Nice, so, yeah.
So I have tomatoes from the garden, not right now, but and she has chickens too. So one of my favorite sandwiches to make is like it's a egg with a tomato slices and Vermont sharp cheddar cheese. You nice, know, like Vermont's yeah. known for like their cheddar cheese. So that's currently my favorite sandwich.
Cool. Yeah, I like a good sharp cheddar as well. Have you ever asked anybody for their autograph?
No, I haven't. I've never met anyone famous. you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm one of those people that are in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So, I mean, I ask authors all the time. So, fair warning to you, if I ever meet you and I have your book in my hand, you're going to sign it for me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that I studied art in university. So, I mean, like, to me, signing a piece is putting your name on it. Like, this is the sort of quality, you know, it's, and I like to recognize people by asking them to sign their work. Right.
Yeah.
What is your favorite smell?
I would have to say, roses.
Roses.
Yeah. We would have, soaps, rose scented, soaps that would have like liquid soap or stuff like that. And I don't know. I just like it.
Okay, cool. What number am I thinking of?
8.
Oh, no, wrong.
No.
Nobody's ever got it right. What's your favorite action movie?
Favorite action movie? All right. Well, do you know that movie Snatch?
Yeah.
That had Jason Statham and Brad Pitt?
Yes, yes, yes.
When I first saw it, it was not my favorite action movie.
Oh, really?
The funny thing about that movie is that it's so damn quotable
mm-hmm.
that, you know, my friends and I started quoting it so much that it soon became like a cult classic favorite action movie.
Yeah. I think that's the one with Brad Pitt. He's the pikey, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels? That's the one that came before that one, right?
Yep.
Was that Guy Ritchie? Is that the director?
Guy Ritchie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I used to go with a friend of mine. We used to go see movies every Friday, and we stumbled across Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and then just that whole, all those actors, you know, Jason Statham, all those kind of guys, it just became, you know, the group of movies to watch. But, well, speaking of movies, here's another question for you. Where the heck is it? I think it's Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
You know, it used to be Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a funny thing that happens with time that I wasn't quite aware of until recently, is that movies you thought were your favorites back then and you still held them in high regard, sometimes you watch them again when you're older and you're like, it's not as good as I thought it was.
Right.
You know? Like, I remember telling my ex-wife, I'm like, you never seen Star Wars? What? You never saw Star Wars? Yeah, I know, right? So I told her, I'm like, we're gonna watch it. And I watched it with her, and she's like, you know, not impressed or anything. And I'm watching it, and I'm like,
are we talking about New Hope, by the way? But which of the Star Wars is your favorite movie?
It was A New Hope, or The Empire Strikes Back. That's also like really good too.
Yeah,
it seems to have more humor in it. A little bit more, but that was so it used to be Star Wars, but I think it's like Star Trek.
Any particular Star Trek?
The one with Jean-Luc Picard is the one I kind of like more grew up with.
Mm-hmm. The Next Generation, the one from the 80s.
Yeah,
right. Next,
that's one I more grew up with and watched more.
Right, cool. Which living person do you admire the most?
You know, I just mentioned this the other day on Twitter. It's no one like super famous, but you know, Sean Allen has really impressed me a lot, because
mm-hmm.
he came in a little after like I did, as far as like starting our YouTube channels, and that guy is just like took off, you know. And the thing I admire about him the most is his persistence, you know, because I see a lot of people, including myself, who start a YouTube channel, they go strong for a while, and it's fun for a while, But then it's like, it starts to become a job, and then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer fun. And the pay isn't all that great either.
This is my eighth year doing this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
I think, so waiting for it to pay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I admire him for, you know, the progress he's made. You know who else I admire too is Chris Ching, mm-hmm. because he's the same way. He's persisted and persisted. And I had the good fortune to meet him last summer.
Yeah,
in Toronto, in the outskirts of Toronto. Like, nicest guy ever. You know, like, you might think that nice guy attitude, you know, on his YouTube channel is just an act, but it's not.
Yeah,
he's generally super nice.
Yeah, you know? We spoke together at Swift Toronto 2019. Yeah, I met him there. Yeah, good guy. You're right. Yeah, very supportive. Like, he follows me on Twitter. He follows me on LinkedIn, and yeah, I always get a good nod, you know, thumbs up or like from him for sure. Yeah. Cool. What's the one thing you own that you should really throw out?
That's a really hard question, because I usually throw out things as soon as I don't need them. I live so light. Most of my life was doing contract work, and and I would move from city to city, you know, to do contracts, and everything I owned fit in my car.
Right.
So it was super easy to get up.
So you're not like a pack rat like me, like.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I don't have a lot, and still, like, everything I own probably fits in my truck. Although I did get a new electric motorcycle, so that probably, I have an electric dirt bike, and now I have an electric motorcycle. So I should probably get rid of the dirt bike. That's what I should get rid of.
Well, it is dangerous. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the electric bike, tell me about that. What's that? Is it like a chargeable and runs just like a regular gas driven bike?
Yeah. Yeah. It's except there's no shifting involved. So it's easier. It's easier to drive. Unfortunately, I just got it delivered in January, you know, in Vermont. Yeah. And we had one day where it got up to 50 degrees, you know, so it was kind of warm. And so I took it out for 11 mile road trip.
Right.
But it was fun. Yeah, it's electric. It'll go 110 kilometers per hour. 110, 120. So you can take it on the interstate, and but it's still small and nimble enough where, you know, it's easy to control. You feel like you're in control of it. Like, I've had motorcycles that were like cruiser motorcycles that are like really big.
Yeah.
And I never enjoyed them that much because they were, you don't really get this good feeling of control over it. Like, you know, when you're on a bicycle, like, you're in control of that bicycle.
Right.
You know, it's light. You can maneuver it quickly and easily and stop fast. But with a big motorcycle like that, it's your control diminishes. So this bike that I got, it can go fast, but it's also smaller and lighter too. It's only like 400 pounds.
What's the most used app on your phone?
Reminders.
You don't have to go and look at the screen time thing to know that.
Maybe I should. But it's that thing. I use it to manage my life, because I have, man, Tim, I have like, you know, 20 ideas in one day, mm-hmm. and I'll lose half of them.
Right.
And so what I, if unless I write it down in Reminders app and then give it a
timeline, yeah,
give it a due date, yeah, at this point in my life, I've really gotten to a point where I have to like remove useless knowledge or data, and everything now for me, I'm kind of like on this new trend for maybe like the last year. Data has to be actionable, otherwise, you know, as far as like value. If it's okay, it might be interesting and have entertainment value if I learn some trivia, but there's also data that you can use and work with that has value, especially. But that's the key thing, is you have to use it or take action with it.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, there's no value for me. So what I do is I have a lot of categories in my Reminders app, and I have like a category for every book. So I'll see something, I'm like, oh, that'd be a great addition, that, you know, to add to this book. And I'll add a reminder to it. So then when I periodically go through and update a book, I just go through the reminders, you know, the tasks. When I have an idea to do something, it's not enough for me. It's not enough to have an idea and say, I'm going to do this at some point in the future. It'll never get done. You know, never get done. I have to give it a day and a time, you know, or else I'll never look at it again. So the Reminders app is highly used.
Yeah, no, that's definitely it. It's one of the things I suffer from, because I do use the reminders for exactly the same reason. But like when I go to a place, I like that it tells me don't go to that restaurant. You know, it didn't sit well with you the last time you went there, kind of thing. But, or, you know, when I was going to work every day and coming home, I had to like manage the mail server or move this or do that or send this email when I get to work. And so I would use the locations to notify me when I got to a place, right? So that was kind of a cool thing. Yeah. So I've used the reminders. Probably don't use it as much now that I've been working from home, but there you go. Cool. All right. We'll get back to the questions. We asked you that one already. So describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
Wow. How do you come up with these questions, Tim?
They're written down for me.
Okay. I think I know what it is.
Okay.
It's always be learning new games.
New games. And
games. That's a funny term. And it's not, doesn't quite mean what you might think it means for me. But like games are like, here's how I define games. Games are something that has a reward to it. Games have rewards. They have barriers. And then, you know, the barriers aren't so big that you can't, you know, you can't get over them. Right. And they're not so easy. So there are no barriers, because then it wouldn't be a game. So games to me are like things that, like Big Mountain Studio is a game for me. Work is a game for me. It's fun to play. There's definitely rewards to it. And learning in itself is a game. You know, there's barriers, there's things that aren't easy to learn. But once you do, it's like, you know, you feel great about it, and you have a new skill set, and you can use it and apply it. So I think that definitely is something that I'm interested in doing. You know, we're getting close to the age where, you know, we're thinking about like retiring, right? And I know some people that have retired, and you know, the one thing that's kind of sad is they start losing their games. They start becoming bored, right?
And you have to find new games when you retire, for sure. Yeah,
you got to find new games.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's so I hope to always be doing that. I love teaching people. It's like no greater satisfaction. So in order to teach people, you have to learn things,
right?
And so you find the things that you love. You know, the things that are fun to play. And then you play with those, like the AI, you know, learning that AI, that was so much fun. And then, you know, then I hope to teach people more, like at work earlier this week, I actually was teaching them, how to use AI, so we can do our jobs better, you know, or faster, or learn, an easier way. Cool. So I think that works for me.
So what are the 5 words again? Always be learning new games.
Always be learning new games.
So now what's your motto? Always be learning new games.
Always be learning new games. Yeah. I like it, Tim. I like it. I like how you brought that around there.
It wasn't intentional. It was a happy accident.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're at the end of the show. So why don't you tell people where they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. I'm pretty active on Twitter. So you can find me there.
Are you on Mastodon yet or no?
I'm not. I haven't made the switch. I've been pretty busy with the book. Sure. So after that gets released, I'll have some free time. Maybe a couple weeks after, I'll have some free time, because, you know, there's always those things where you have to, like, there's a misspelling on this page. You got to fix it and redeploy it, or, you know, something like that.
Do you have an editor, or do you have somebody proofread your work? Or
I have beta readers.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I have beta readers that get early editions. You know, you know what I do with them is, so I'm part of this huge Utah community, and I have friends on there that I talk with all the time. iOS developers, you know.
Sure.
We go to meetups together, and so when I create, what I'll do is I'll change the cover of the book, and I'll say that, you know, this is the you know, the Dave Nutter edition.
Right, right.
Dave Nutter is one of the guys in our community. Yeah. He's on Twitter too. He does a lot of Swift UI work. But I personalize their editions, you know, when I give it to them.
Cool. Oh, they get printed copies?
No, they get digital copies.
Digital copies, okay. Yeah. So you just
yeah.
Cool. Neat. Yeah, well, you can always add me to a beta list if you want.
Yeah, I'll send you.
I'm always into like the new stuff. I beta read a few people's work as well. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to wrap up. So my name is Timitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine and the Mastodon. And if you're watching this on YouTube, I got a point here. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And of course, you know, don't forget Big Mountain Studios is your YouTube channel. I don't know if you've had any recent episodes, but you should subscribe over there too, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I plan on making videos. Like, you know, after the divorce, I don't have my equipment anymore. Yeah. So I have to figure a way to, I started today because I made that video for Twitter. Oh, so okay. I started today like, oh, I need new equipment.
Cool. All right. Well.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
We started in 2014. It was just a bunch of three or four of us got together to do this show. And then I learned audio editing in university traditionally, not, you know, with actual tape and stuff.
I'm not kidding.
You know, so I used Final Cut Pro and I used Logic to put the show together. And it was like, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks in and I went, wait a minute, this is becoming a job. And, you know, I'm now, you know, this is now, we're actually coming up on our 9th anniversary in August, right? So.
Wow.
Been at it for a while, and this isn't the only podcast I do. I also do one on sci-fi shows as well, right? So, yeah.
Hey, have you thought about like hiring someone to do your editing?
Yeah, again, to come back to that, I have no money. I don't mind doing it. So I kind of do it. I you know, my grandson was interested in doing it, but you know, he's a bit more of a perfectionist than I am, right? So like, I mean, there's the 80-20 rule. Like, you know, I can't fix every single mistake. And I mean, I've been on podcasts where people didn't even edit the audio afterwards, right? So I do go through and I'll remove the blurps. And you're like, when you were sitting there, like going, you know, thinking about your answer, I'll cut that out, right? So
yeah, yeah.
But you know, because people just don't need to sit through that. No offense.
Right, exactly. Or when you're typing, you know, when I'm recording, I'm kind of a slower typer.
Yeah, oh yeah, so yeah.
In my videos, like I'll speed that up.
Yeah, that's they do that at Ray Rumblick, or they were doing it. I don't know if they're still doing it now, but it's funny because. Couple of times that I did the videos, my friend Tammy Coron, who I did one of the podcasts with, she told me about this software. I think it's called Type Maestro or something like that. And you can write all, you can script it all. You enter all the text in, and then you're on the in Xcode or whatever you want to, you know, you put your cursor and you say, and you, I'm like, want to type this method out. It's actually the Type Maestro that goes ding 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 and puts all the characters in, right? But no, they didn't like us using that because it looked artificial, right? It's no different than sped up. But a lot of times when I'm like, I'm horrible to watch typing. Like if I do a live demo or whatever, I apologize in advance.
That's the same with me.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and to be honest, you like a lot of the courses I go on YouTube or on Udemy or YouTube as well, I'll pause and I'll you know, constantly reaching for, I wish there was a faster way to pause the video. I guess there isn't a key. I use the keyboard. I just looked at the keyboard and I realized it's got a pause button there, but you know, like you want to pause it, you know, and then go back and then enter the type into Xcode as a student, I mean, like, you know, like, and that's a challenge. I don't like to copy and paste because I don't learn anything by copying and pasting. You know, yeah. I want to type it out and I can kind of look at how the code completion is working and see what Xcode's thinking about what I'm typing. And, you know, and it's cool because I've noticed some people, a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but like, if you type in a method that's part of a class, like a, you know, if you start typing view did load, it'll put the func and the override and all that kind of stuff in for you. You don't have to go, you know, override func, blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of cool that it'll do all that stuff. And I really like, I was working today with the test-driven development, and I noticed that the code completion was working really well. You know, I don't know if it was that the byproduct of TDD, but it was pretty cool the way it kind of, you know, the code completion is working much better than it did, like remember 3-4 years ago when it would crash constantly?
Yeah.
Was it source? What did it say? We had some messages come up all like source something or other quit or whatever. It was really
I know what you mean. Or I hate it when it's like it doesn't know the context of what you're typing, and so you just get like everything.
Like, or like in my case, I type the wrong thing and it gives me everything.
I still I'm waiting for the day where, like, even today I was programming and I'll call my functions first before they're like test driven development, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you create your function first and it fails and then you fix it just so enough.
You actually do TDD yourself or?
No, well, I used to, working on one of the contracts, we did a lot of TDD. But I still, today, I still kind of like program that way.
Right.
You know, where I'm in the view, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to call this function on the observable object, which doesn't exist yet, but I'll type it in, you know, and call the function that doesn't exist. And I'm waiting for it to like offer me, hey, do you want me to create that function for you? Yeah. You know, it's like, yes.
Oh, I love the fact that it'll write the init method in a class for me now. Like, oh my God, that's so helpful. Because that's so redundant, like having to self dot this equals this. I mean, like, do I have to keep typing that out? Like, can we not automate? Can ChatGPT do this for me, you know?
Well, I mean, I hate to say this, but Microsoft did have a better, Visual Studio was a great tool as far as like a development environment. Because it would do those things. You know, you could write in a function that didn't exist and it would like give you an option like, you want me to create this for you? And you're like, yeah. You know?
Cool,
and it would create it for you. So I had a lot of like really nice features. Like, have you ever used JetBrains?
The Android thing.
They had one for I'm not quite sure where they are now. I used it a while ago.
Well, Android Studio is made by JetBrains, right? The current.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that. But you could use it to do like a C# work or create like Microsoft apps and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it, like, we had it at one contract, and that thing was, that was like the ultimate in code refactoring and intelligence, and you know, it could do so many things for you. Xcode is like light years behind.
Oh, I know some people who use it because and you can load in the Swift library to it, right? And it'll so you can actually write Swift in Visual Code, right? Visual Code Studio, something like that.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
I've tried it out. I've used it because I was using it for I've been doing WordPress forever too, right? Like I used to write websites from the ground up, right? And then it was a chore. And then I had to do nonprofit for once, and it must have been like maybe 18 years ago or more. And I thought, well, I said to the lady who run the ballet, I said, do you mind if we try this WordPress thing? I've heard good things about it. And I mean, it's still the same template I wrote for her like that many years ago. But I've learned over the years on their other contract work I did to write my own templates, my own themes, right? Because the themes always have way too much stuff in them. And but last couple of times I did, I think it was a LinkedIn course actually. There's a guy named Morten out of Vancouver. I think he was leading this course, and it was using Visual Studio to do the coding for Xcode or for the web WordPress. Right. And he's got this way of, maybe it's not him, but there was a way I'd learned, he showed how to use that. And of course it's got Git and all that kind of stuff built in, and You know, so you can do all the cool stuff, and you can have just like any good IDE, you know, it does all the sort of completions for you and that kind of stuff, which is really nice, right? And this is writing PHP in this case, right? But still, and how to structure, you know, the project, like it's just like Xcode Project Navigator on the one side and multiple windows of code and, you know, the debugger at the bottom. And yeah. So, I mean, I like Xcode a lot, but it would be my go-to for everything. But, you know, I've been using BB Edit forever for text editing, and, you know, it's hard to give up on the old tools, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I want, Tim. I just want it to just write the function for me. It doesn't even have to be perfect. Just write a placeholder. Yeah.
Well, I mean, especially I find it really frustrating. Like, and I'm glad the MemberWise initializer is what it's called, right? The when they started adding that in Xcode, is like, well, how many years have I wanted this? Because it's the most mundane thing about writing a class in Swift is that having to write that initializer, right? So, and it's always the same thing. Like, you know. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's super nice. I had it come up just the other day, and I was all surprised. Like somehow I'd never used it before, and I did something on the keyboard where it just all of a sudden like appeared, and I was like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, it just like typed out the whole thing for me, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, neat. Yeah, no, I mean, I had noticed that using the, like, well, I'm using the camera, using an app called Camo. I was using one called Details for a while. I interviewed Joe Chaplinsky. I don't know if you know who he is, but he was using Camo, and I went, wow, your webcam is amazing. What are you using? I'm using an old phone, and the cameras are much better. So I'm actually looking at you on an old, like, I don't know, like a, from mid-2000s LCD display, I think it's called, Apple, and the camera on it is just horrible. It's like a, you know, old school webcam. I've noticed that the cameras on the new Macs are much better, like the M1s and any of the later model ones, because now they've, because of COVID and Zoom and everything like that, Apple's increased the quality of the cameras, so, which is good.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, like, you look pretty sharp. What Mac are you on?
This is an M1.
Yeah, right. Yeah. A 16, 14 kind of thing? Or
14.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a smaller, I have a 16 for work, and it's like a brick.
Yeah, I know. That's, I had the exact same thing in my bag over here.
Yeah.
It's too heavy. And I like this one because I work remote.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you want to get out of the house and work somewhere else.
Yeah.
On the weekends, you know, or on Fridays, I don't work. Our team just works 4/10. Sure. So on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I can get out because of space and work on this little guy.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. No, I do. I mean, you know, I'm one of these guys that always buys just before Apple makes a big announcement for some reason. I just have a habit of doing that. So I had just, I was humping a MacBook Air 2013 for years. I ran my entire business on it, made, you know, umpteen thousand dollars on it over the years. And then I started the podcast on it and all that kind of stuff. And 2020, a friend of mine that works at Apple helped, you know, get friends and family discount kind of thing, got me a 2020 13-inch MacBook Air. We, you know, we put a 2 terabyte hard drive in it, you know, 16 gigs of RAM, wow, the whole thing. And then Apple announced the M1s. Yeah. So last year, I had a bit of a contract with Apple for during 2021, I guess. And at the end of it, I had, you know, surplus money. So I spoiled myself by buying myself this M1 Air, because I, you know, it was killing me not to have an M1 to try out all the stuff that everybody was talking about. Yeah. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. You see it all over social media. You know, this is my compile time before, this is my compile time after.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, like, it's one of these things where, like, I would say about, like, disk space. If you think, oh, I'm going to get a 2 terabyte drive, I'll never fill it. And then, like, you know, 3 weeks later, you've got it full. Right. My first Macs were, like, you know, 80 megabyte hard drives, and they would constantly get filled. So my whole life has been full of this thing. And I've noticed lately, when I fire up something on the M1, it bounces a few more times than I'm expecting, you know, the icon before it launches, right? Especially things like, and it's just been lately, like, I mean, I don't know if it's updates to Ventura or Ventura itself, but, like, I have noticed that, or maybe it's just I'm getting used to the speed. My M1 Pro Max, you know, is super duper fast, and you know, and it just, just an extra couple of bounces, and I'm looking at this thing going, at least we're not getting the beach balls anymore, right?
I know. I know exactly what you mean. I noticed the same thing. Like like I got the M1 first, and then work gave me an M1.
Yeah.
Maybe like 3-4 weeks later.
Yeah.
And so I noticed the difference then. But then when I got the work one, it's actually faster than this one. Like it's beefier, you know.
Yeah.
And now like I'm noticing oh, this could be a little bit faster, you know.
Yeah.
It's all relative. You know, you start to change your expectations.
Well, and also because I'm a smaller Mac user. I mean, I had the 15 inch and when I worked at the bank. I just changed jobs last year and after like 6.5 years. But when they asked me what I wanted, I said, I'm fine with a 14 inch. Doesn't need to have the Pro Max. Doesn't need to be like all the bells and whistles. Cause I mean, I wasn't really going to be, I'm an engineering manager. I'm not really compiling code. I'm, you know, doing code reviews and playing around here and there, but I don't need the horsepower, right? Anyway, yeah. So this thing arrives, Ultra Max, you know, 16 inch with, I forget how much RAM it's got on it, but yeah, it's way too much and it's too heavy. I mean, like now that we're back to the office a couple of days a week, you know, I'm begrudgingly, you know, throw it in a backpack and, you know, getting on the streetcar and going to work, right? Sort of thing, right? So
you can't leave the Mac at work?
I do. You know, it's funny. So I have a small, but I have I take my own M1 iPad Pro. I have an 11 inch one and I have a little bag that I used to carry my 13 inch in, right? So so I'll go in on Tuesday, I'll take the whole affair with me and then I'll just bring the iPad home for at night. And I'm 90% of the time I don't even touch it when I'm at home. Then I take it and then I go back to work and I pick up the Mac. But I've only started doing that a couple of weeks ago. So last week I brought the Big Mac home on Tuesday and went back on Wednesday. And you know, I don't know, maybe I'm losing a few calories by doing that. I don't know.
are you in Toronto?
I am in Toronto, yeah.
Or in the Toronto area?
Yeah.
So how far is your commute? Like how far do you
It's 20 go? Minutes. I live right downtown. So yeah, it's 20 minute streetcar ride. I mean, like I worked in the financial district. I worked for one of the big Canadian banks here, Toronto Dominion Bank, TD Bank.
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of in a historically significant building downtown. Like all the major banks here in Canada are, they're all, there's an intersection where I used to joke that all the money in Canada goes through that intersection. King and Bay. And so what I liked about one of the things that was on my, you know, when you're looking at a job, you look at the pros and cons. And one of the pros for this thing was location. Cause I can, in the summertime, I can walk home from work and that's good for you. Cause you get any exercise. We also have these bike rental things that you can rent, you know, which I'm going to look into doing that this year. And so the commute was great. And now that I'm working for Spot Hero in Chicago, but in the Toronto office here, and their office is right next to TD. So I haven't lost commute, which is great, you know?
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Yeah, yes.
I love Toronto. I've been there a couple of times. And the first time I went there, I got to admit, I didn't think the city was going to be as big as it was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was huge. Yeah. It's so much bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah, well, Toronto, actually, the population of Toronto is bigger than most of the provinces in Canada.
Wow.
Just Toronto GTA itself, right? And it's a sprawl. I mean, like, you know, we've watched it, those of us who lived here have watched it grow from like the downtown core to all the suburbs and out to along the lake, right? So I think it's pretty much solid city all the way from like Hamilton, you know, Burlington, Oakville, Mississauga, Toronto, and then Scarborough, Whitby, Oshawa. Like it just goes on. And so that's what we call the GTA, is kind of like, the GTA is actually a little bit smaller than what I just described, but you know, if you look at the footprint of it and the number of people, I think we're number three in North America. Like I think New York, LA, New York, and then Toronto in terms of size, and Montreal, which is just up the road, is on that list somewhere too. And I think in the top 10 of city sizes in North America.
You know what I also liked about Toronto too, and I was kind of impressed about this, was the beaches.
Yeah,
I was there in the summertime, and like I couldn't believe, like the city is right there, and then you had these big sandy beaches, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this place is great.
So you're in the East End beaches, I guess, or because there are beaches all the way along.
Yeah.
Was it called the beaches, the neighborhood you were in?
No, I actually don't know what it was called. a friend of mine and I, that I grew up with in high school, we went out to visit another friend who had lived there, or who was living there. And she gave us the tour and took us around. And, you know, she shows us, you know, like, this is where I play volleyball on Saturdays. And it's like just a, you know,
on the beach. Yeah.
On the beach.
Yeah.
There's like tons of like volleyball, you know, nets set up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is amazing. This place is
the reason good. I ask, I think that's the neighborhood just south of me, actually, the beaches. Yeah. It's one of the premier places to live in Toronto as well. Right. So, yeah. Mm. All right. Well, thanks for your time.
Yeah,
it's been great. I got lots of content for a great episode. I'm sure people will really enjoy it. And great to meet you.
All right, cool.
Of course, I've been reading your stuff for years. So
yeah, well, it's nice to meet you too.
Thanks for the format. I really like it. So.